This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On the show this week, we hear from Debbie Adams in a series of tips on finding and producing a young horse. But first, Joe Whitehouse, CEO here at the USEA, joins us to tell us about the sports summit that is scheduled to be held during this year's annual convention. Joe, welcome back.
Thank you, Chris. Good to be here.
Well, here we are coming in well into November now, just a few more weeks left for you, but we know what you've been doing amongst the many responsibilities that you've had has been the summit that we're going to be hosting at this year's convention. So tell us how that came about.
Well, it's sort of been percolating for over a year now. Obviously, we hear concerns from the areas from time to time, and we've seen a lot of new events wanting to come on the calendar, and trying to get them a date is not easy. And then there's been other issues that came up, you know, about with the changes to the FEI rules and so many FEI competitions now where used to be advanced horse trials or intermediate preliminary horse trials. There's now so many FEI competitions, and it puts a little bit of a cost implication on the organizers to run those. And various other things have come up over the months. And it really is time for us to take a step back, sit down, look at some of the issues that are facing the sport, facing organizers, facing riders, and see if the models, the business models that we have in place are actually really going to work in this new 21st century, 15 years in it. But it's a whole different world now from when the sport started back in the 50s. And it's just a time to sit down and have a complete fresh look. Hope people can come with some great new ideas. I hate the phrase thinking outside of the box, but that's what we'd like people to do. Is there a better way for eventing to be managed and for it to develop into the future, given the new technology, given some of the changes internationally? I think it's time to look at where the sport is and where it can go.
Taking a broader perspective then, Joe, a more global approach, and maybe looking at the issues facing the sport around the world too.
Yes, that very definitely. You know, one of the big things that we're actually looking at right now is, you know, that there have been some incidents in Europe, and there's been a big push to within the USEA to look at course design and see if we can, if new technology is available. So I think there's some really good things that we can be doing. Obviously, like everything, it's going to cost money. So how do we raise the money for these things without putting the burden onto the competitors, or onto the members? So a whole new look at the sport to see if there is a better way to do it and make it so that you can have professionals and amateurs all competing together. That's the beauty of our sport, is that professionals and amateurs compete side by side. They work together, they support each other. And, you know, many sports, that doesn't happen anymore. In eventing, A is the only sport where men and women compete on an equal playing field. But it's also one of the few sports anymore where the professionals at the top of the game are actually on a week-to-week basis competing side-by-side with people at the lower levels, you know, the beginner novice rider even. So it's a unique sport, and how do we keep that very special part of eventing as we're developing much more into a business?
So what would be the format of this summit, Joe, during convention?
Okay, well, it's interesting. This last few days, I've been receiving a few emails where members are really putting some time and thought into this, letting me know what's happening in their personal area, and also some of the ideas that they think we need to address, suggestions perhaps for addressing things. So what we're going to do is we're gathering all of this together, and we're going to allocate time slots. And we do have some representatives. If the person can't be there themselves, then they are. I advise them to go to their area board of governor. Some have one, some have two, depending on the size of the area. And having that board of governor represent them and their ideas and thoughts. So we're going to allocate time for different subjects. So if things start to fall into the same category, there'll be one section for items that all look under the same category. And we do also have some experts coming in. We have an independent moderator who will be there just to make sure that everybody gets their fair share of the time and that they can also, we keep it all moving forward. But the biggest thing about this, it has to be positive, it has to be constructive. We want people to get their issues out there, and we want people to think about it. You know, we've only got two and a half hours. So it's not a lot of time to do everything. We're not going to solve it, that's for sure. But we're hoping that we can put together task forces that can take each category, and then they can take it and brainstorm it. And then later we'll have another town hall meeting from within various areas, move it around a little bit so everybody gets a chance to be part of it. So it could be an ongoing project for, months to come, getting people's ideas and thoughts down and then trying to make them into workable projects. But I don't, as I say, I don't think we're going to get solutions to everything on the first day.
Right.
One of the things I hope is that people will have an open mind. They'll come out of it and say, I hadn't thought about that side of things. Now let's see if we can work on that. You know, everybody tends to get very locked into their own little silo with their own little problem. And sometimes it just needs to hear a few different ideas to get the juices flowing, come up with some solutions.
Absolutely. So who will be the moderator, Joe? Who are the people that will be featured on the top table?
Okay, well, Diane Pitts, of course, is the president, and she will introduce and lead the discussion as president. That's her role. We have Rob Burling, who we've been talking to Rob all year. He has his own PR and consultant company. He was recommended to me by Chris Welton of the USEF. They had used Rob to do some of their strategic planning and some of their other analysis of the governance of the USEF. So he's become very interested in horses and the sport, and he's actually very good about being able to keep people on track. So Rob Burling will be there. I talked to Derek DeGrazier at Galway Downs this weekend, and he has concerns that are particular to him and Area 6. And so he's going to have time on the program. I talked to David O'Connor at Rebecca Farm, and he also is very willing to get involved and help. Jim Wofford is going to be involved. He's going to be there. He will, you know, obviously Jim is one of the best experts in the field of eventing, so we're hoping that he'll be very involved and have advice for us. It's going to be, there's a group of the organizers are going to be represented and are actually getting together a very formal well-reasoned document that they're going to be presenting. So I just don't know if 2.5 hours is going to be able to get everything done that we need to get done. It's just a lot of things, and I'm very, very impressed with how people are responding to it, Chris.
Well, that is encouraging, and as you say, it will be an ongoing debate that you're going to take around the country, so all members can have their input if they're not at convention in a few weeks' time, and maybe we can pick up after convention, Joe, and share it on the podcast, what it came out of that meeting.
Yes, I hope so, Chris, and I just please encourage everyone to send an email and go online and look at the item that is on the homepage of the USEA. It's eventing 2016 through 2026. If you want to have a voice in the next decade of the sport, we want to hear you. So please get involved, and we'll follow up afterwards and let you know how everything went. I think communication is going to be the big thing.
Absolutely. Well, we'll keep everybody apprised here on the podcast, Joe. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the program and sharing that with us.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Thanks for the time.
And you'll find more information about the summit and the rest of the convention program on the website at useventing.com. Just click on the link to convention on the right-hand side of the homepage. And now for a new series of tips here on the program with various experts in the sport, we begin with Debbie Adams, who is an owner, rider, trainer, coach, and judge. Thank you very much for coming back and for agreeing to do this series of tips for us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's my passion. These young horses.
Well, I know that you obviously got a depth of experience there to bring to us each week. So we're going to start with the very basics of finding that horse in the first place. There must be a shopping list that you have when you go around looking for that ideal young horse.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, if you're in the sport long enough and you do it from different angles, rider, trainer, judge, you really start to develop what you think's essential for these young horses. And for me, I probably put equal weight on confirmation and attitude. Because if I don't have those two things, the horse is not going to make it.
So how forgiving are you with other traits in if you've got the ideal confirmation and an attitude? And what are those first things that you're looking at when you first meet the horse?
I literally will walk in the barn, hopefully see it in the barn, not the ring first, so you can see it in a somewhat relaxed atmosphere. And symmetry, balance, how the horse stands. Does he stand over all four legs? Is he restless in the cross ties? Is he nervous? Is he anxious? I mean, I go back and forth between confirmation and attitude constantly, the whole time I look at the horse. You know, how is he when I walk around him? Does he have, you know, high enough withers to hold the saddle? Does he stand still while I walk around him? I just constantly go back and forth because the two things are just essential. If I don't have a mind that I can work with, it doesn't matter how beautiful they are.
And at what point would you say, okay, well, he just doesn't even have a good attitude in the stall with me? So is there any point in looking at him out? You know, I'm just curious as to how you progress then, Debbie.
Okay. Most of the time, you're not fortunate enough to see them in the stall when you first arrive because they know you're coming to see the horse, so that's good. He's all cleaned up and ready. They're usually on the cross ties. But that'll give you manners, and that'll give you what kind of discipline they have and how much awareness they have of other people. I looked at a four-year-old last week, well, several of them last week, and just watching them, this one particular four-year-old that I looked at, the whole time I was walking through the area where the horses were all standing, there were multiple horses on cross ties, they watch you. You know, I want a horse that's very aware of his surroundings. If they're too quiet and accepting, almost a school horse attitude, for me, that's not a horse that I want to jump cross country. I want a horse that's very sharp, that knows what's ahead of him, behind him, left and right. He doesn't need to react to it. He just needs to be aware of it.
So engaged, basically. As soon as you're in his space, he's engaging with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then I'll do the normal confirmation that everybody does. Uphill balance, straight legs, symmetry. There's a certain balance to the length of the neck, the slope of the shoulder, length of the back. We can all read books. We have a feel for what it is we like on the horse, certain size of bone. Good feet are essential, especially the upper level horses, because they take quite a pounding just from the conditioning work. So you want to have symmetrical feet. You want to have a good shape to them. You want to have enough height to the heel that the horse is landing on the bulbs of his heels. All just the normal basics confirmation that for almost any sport. And then, of course, we take a slightly different angle to it because our horses have to gallop. So when we watch them move, which I put into confirmation just having them move on the line, not only do you want them to move straight, but there's got to be a stride that carries quite a bit of length forward, not just up. Like any step anyone takes, you pick your foot up and you take it forward. And in show jumping, because you're not worried about a long stride, that stride can be more up and down step. The galloping horses have to have a little more forward reach in that step, and you can really see that in the walk in the canter.
Take us through the next stage then of when you've watched him on the lunge, maybe, or would you see him loose at all?
I have seen them loose. I don't need to see them loose. I love to see them ridden. I always have someone else ride them first because I want to watch the horse. I want to see his attitude, his training, see what his reaction is, and I want to see what they do to have him perform, whatever it's going to be. And that's where probably a little bit of a judging background helps. Because watching how someone rides the horse will tell you an awful lot about him. You know, how they set him up for the flying change, how they set him up for a canter depart, whatever it is they do tells you what they think about that horse's rideability and balance. I saw one recently, supposed to be a lovely horse, and to bring him back from canter to trot, they made sure they were aiming him at a high jump standard so they didn't have to pull on him. And in a four-year-old, I don't want something that I can't go from canter to trot on, but I need to run it into something. I mean, you just watch where they do the transitions. You watch how the horse's attitude is. Do they use the whole ring? Do they keep it on a circle? So I'll watch all that before I get on. But for me, I have to ride a horse if I'm going to buy it.
Okay. And then, obviously, how much you ride him will depend on how much you like him, I suppose, at that point, does it?
Absolutely. And to me, it's only fair when I'm shopping if it's a horse that I'm not really interested in, but I might respect them. I think it's a tremendous project for someone else. Again, last weekend shopping, I saw a lovely four-year-old, but it's just sharper than I feel like dealing with. It's a quick little package. It's lovely. I rode it, walked, try, and canter, but it was like sitting on this little bug. It was so quick, but it was a tremendous athlete. But I didn't bother doing much with it because I knew I was not going to buy that one to develop. The interesting thing, I sat on him and he was great, but I felt like I didn't have enough horse out in front of me, enough shoulder and neck in an uphill manner that I would want to gallop it cross country. Standing on the ground, it was gorgeous, but when you rode it, you just didn't feel like you had enough length of neck and uphill balance that you'd want to run downhill at Plantation on it.
Right, so the horse that's up in front of you, and then you pop him over a few fences, would you ask him to do like an extended canter? Would you take him out of the arena and just open him up a little bit?
Do both of those things, no matter where I shop. If I can't take the horse out of the arena, fine, then I don't need to buy it. But there's lots of horses. I take them all out of the ring, even if I can only ride them around a parking lot, someplace, you know, with horse trailers and cars, and I find someplace I can take them out of the arena, preferably into a field, into the woods, on a path. One of the ones I rode last weekend, we went, they'd had a lot of rain, so it was great. I found mud puddles. I found a big washed out area in the driveway, so we stepped over it like a baby ditch. I love to ride them on uneven ground, even if it's just a slight slope, just to feel what they're going to do. just their balance. It gives you a blueprint. It's not necessarily a deal breaker, but just how they handle it. So yeah, I take all the horses out of the arena, and I do gallop every horse that I seriously want to try, even if it's in an arena, because I do want the better footing for that. I will open them up. And just as important as the gallop is when I bring them back, can I bring them back and have some kind of balance, adjustability, elasticity, just what is their natural reaction and what do I think I'm going to have to train into them?
Right. So you're looking for all aspects of that, you know, within that time frame, which would be typically how long? I know it's going to vary, but, you know, if people are thinking, okay, well, how long is it going to take? How long should it take me to give, you know, get the first impressions of the horse, give it, you know, the full workup? What are we looking at realistically, Debbie?
I can do that in about a half an hour. From watching him in the barn to being ridden to riding himself, I mean, you can feel the quality of the trot quite quickly. There's a big difference between training and shopping and trying them. Want to feel what they have naturally and what has been produced in them, but you're not really trying to change it. I would say an hour is way more time than I would need, but I would only say a full hour to go through all that if, you know, they do a long ride in showing them to me, and if they do a lot of different things, jumping, if they want to show me a gymnastic and all that. 45 minutes would not be unusual for somebody showing you one horse and giving you a big production. I like to ride them twice. If it's a horse that I'm interested in and I can make it work, I like to ride them later in the day or a second day and get on them first just to see what the horse is like, fresh out of the stall, no turnout, no lunging, nobody else warming them up. Very rarely are you surprised, but it just gives you more information and helps you kind of sort out in your mind what type of price you're willing to go and if this really is the one you think he is.
And how much of this horse would you have seen before you even get to meet him in terms of videos? What would you expect of, the video and the information on his breeding and his background? Would you be looking for before you even get on the road to look at him?
Oh, good point. If I can have videos or still shots, that's great, because then I can look at all my conformation and movement that way. I also always look at bloodlines. I'm very interested in different bloodlines, especially with the transition of our sport. I try to find horses that do have thoroughbred blood in them, but I'm also really looking for horses that have jumper blood of some kind, whether it's a super event horse jumper or show jumpers, because our sport is really a jumping sport. So, yeah, I look at their bloodlines to see what their chemistry has been and what their chances are of being good jumpers for our sport.
And the other point, we talked about, you know, how he interacts with you when you approach him in the stall, in the grooming rack, wherever you meet him or watching him, you know, being mounted, you know, being handled by his owner and how he interacts with you. But what about his manners, Debbie? How important is that he has basic ground manners?
Yeah, I guess you're right. That's just something you expect and want. Like, I don't know the other sports as well as I know eventing, but the relationship that we get with the horses, conditioning them, riding, taking them cross-country, it really becomes quite an intense relationship with that horse. Even at the young stage, relying on each other and listening to one another and the trust factor when you first teach them cross country is huge. So when you're handling them in the barn and you're meeting them, yeah, you are evaluating how they react to you. Because if they don't respect you leading them, they're not going to respect you when you're on their back.
And you know, we know how important it is to have that discipline and for them to respect your space as well. And because that translates, you know, you lead them out the barn. If they don't have it in the barn, then when you lead them out the barn, and then they've got to stand still while you get on them, and they've got to learn to stand still around the arena, that sort of thing, and not be rude. So that is as fundamental to the process. And you probably, and I'm teasing this out of you, Debbie, because I know a lot of things when you do it, you've been doing it for so long, they become instinctive. And you don't actually even consciously think about it. It's how you move around the horse and the horse moves around you. So I think it's helpful to our audience to actually verbalize this, that it is part of the assessment.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, you're saying it exactly right. I can't say it better. I mean, that is true. I mean, if they have to stand absolutely still. I mean, I've had quite a few four-year-olds that I can only get on if somebody holds them. That's not unusual. I don't have an indoor to start them in, so I am outside, so that does make a difference. But as long as they stand still with somebody holding them, that's fine. It's just part of the process. But so that I can quietly adjust my stirrup. But I'm still of the old school that you keep your foot in the stirrup when you adjust it on a young horse, so you're not shifting around a lot. Like, we're saying, what's their attitude towards me, but it's also my attitude towards them. Like, I don't take my feet out of the stirrups to adjust them on the young horses. I don't take my jackets on and off. I don't expect them to absorb something an eight-year-old would do. So I try and be as conscious of my impact on them as theirs on me.
And this is all part of the process, that initial assessment and evaluation. And you would, presumably, the further you travel, the more you're likely to go back the next day and look at the horse.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've taken somewhere that they feel very nice and that the lovely horse is not for me. I've cantered them one direction and I get off and they go, don't you want to jump? And as my husband said last weekend to these people that owned one particular horse, he said, oh, she's staying on and now she's taking him for a hack. That's a good sign for you.
Exactly.
He said, how long do I try them? Well, the longer I try them, if I'm on them for 45, if I'm with the horse for 45 minutes, or I go back into the barn while we untack him and take the wraps off and spend a little time with him, then you know I'm getting pretty serious.
Well, good signs for the owner of that horse, that Debbie might be interested. So you might get lucky today. This may be the horse for her. Debbie, thank you very much indeed for sharing that with us. And we're going to continue this series through beyond, obviously, the evaluation and then getting the horse home and obviously depending on what age it is. So what are we going to address next time?
Well, I think that is important when we first get them home and start them. I think that'd be very interesting to people. What we do those first couple of weeks when they arrive at the farm, how soon do you take them cross country?
All of that we will unpack here with our series of tips here with Debbie Adams. Debbie, thank you again so much for coming on the program and sharing this with us.
Thank you.
And that's it for this week's program. Don't forget to check the website at useventing.com for all the latest information regarding this year's annual meeting and convention, which takes place at the Omni Shoreham Hotel and Resort in Washington, D.C. from December the 2nd through the 6th. And whilst you're on the website, don't forget to look into the latest leaderboards, which will give you an indication of the riders and horses that we will be celebrating at this year's convention. And you can also find regular updates, of course, on our social media at Facebook and Twitter. This podcast is available for download from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast app. And until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.